Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013. And you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour. And I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
Welcome to another edition of Carson's Corner in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. My name is Bob Carson, and we're live here on Blog Talk Radio. 347-326-9749 is the number if you want to be a part of the program. We also have the chat room open for you as well, so please feel free to chime in during the course of this great show. We're going to be having Keith Bishop. He's going to be calling in soon. We had him on almost, I believe, exactly a month ago to talk about his great book, Slop the Book. Slopthebook.com is the website. The name of the book is Slop the Wild Boar Nation, and it talks about the extreme right wing in this country and how destructive they are, the Tea Party, and how essentially, they are tearing down our society. And, you know, it's very, very interesting because the last time we had Keith on the show, we were discussing Sarah Palin. You know, we mentioned how her rhetoric and whatnot is damaging. And it's no surprise that recently Sarah Palin speaking at some convention or something like that compared debt to slavery. And this has been really a meme within the extreme right wing for, quote, some time now. They equate government programs such as Social Security and Medicare with slavery, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, these programs help raise people out of the poverty. If you look at, you know, Social Security, look at how many people have been lifted out of poverty. Seniors are doing relatively well because of Social Security. Everybody anticipates Social Security. Social Security is a godsend. It is one of the greatest things about this country. And, of course, it's under attack by your private special interests. But nonetheless, you can't be free if you're in poverty. Your ability to make money determines the quality of life that you live, and your ability to make money is influenced by various factors. And so, you know, this is a way for the extreme right wing, the corporatists out there, the fascists, those that seek to completely overrun government and hand it to private special interests. Understand that when you hear, you know, things like privatization, private sector, that equals the corporate sector. That equals, you know, power in the hands of the few. And so when you hear these right-wingers talk about, you know, this is slavery, debt is slavery, and we need to abolish these government programs, and we just need to replace government with the individuals that are funding us, you know, the special interest, the Chamber of Commerce, the American Legislative Exchange Council, this corporate group or that corporate group, that is slavery, okay? Because, you know, ultimately, if you are in control, if corporations have even more control over our society, have even more power, that is detrimental to our way of life. You know, corporations are not democratic institutions. Corporations are essentially monsters trying to gobble up as much profit as they can. There is no regard for social need. There's no regard for workers. Workers are simply inputs into the production process, and so it doesn't matter. But I want to highlight something that is also a tool used by the elites in our country and has been for, you know, quite some time, is the use of race to achieve political gains and to achieve ultimately economic gains. Okay, Paul Street wrote a great book about crashing. It's called Crashing the Tea Party. Okay, and this book came out a couple of years ago, and it was one of the first scholarly examinations into the Tea Party. And in the book, he mentions that during the first National Tea Party Convention, which was held in Nashville, Tennessee, I think sometime in 2010, maybe 2009, you had speakers like Tom Tancredo, and you had speakers like Sarah Palin espouse racist rhetoric to a all-white crowd, much to their delight. You know, Tom Tancredo spoke about bringing back literacy tests, and you know, Sarah Palin followed, or she was at the convention with racially charged language. And you know, this is part of the attempt to reach, you know, individuals out there, to activate individuals, mainly white, mainly of lower education, the low information voters, and get them revved up and get them excited, get them paranoid, because ultimately, if you have them revved up, excited, and paranoid, then they're active in the political process, and that essentially equals, you know, more corporate control, power in the hands of special interests. And that's what this is all about. And, you know, we pointed this out the last time Keith was on the show, is how this is extremely dangerous, because we have changing demographics in America. We have an angry right wing that feels that their country is slipping away from them. They feel that, you know, I think it was some MSNBC host today called it the white grievance industry. They feel that the civil rights era is playing out in 2013. Only it's white Americans that are being oppressed by minorities. They feel that, you know, groups like ACORN and others are stealing elections. You know, whatever the right-wing paranoia machine, you know, puts out there. And this is very dangerous, because what we're seeing now, what we've seen since 2009, which was chronicled in the Department of Homeland Security report, is we're seeing these right-wing terrorists out there, the preppers, the truthers, the conspiracy theorists with regards to the Federal Reserve and the currency, and we're seeing these individuals being activated all across America. The latest example of this was the shooting at LAX Airport, where a TSA agent, I believe, was shot and killed by one of these right-wing nut jobs who undoubtedly subscribe to right-wing conspiracy theories put out there by groups that sponsor people like Sarah Palin, maybe even Sarah Palin herself. You know, if you recall in 2010, when Gabrielle Giffords was shot by this, again, another right-wing nut job who subscribed to conspiracy theories, he was anti-abortion, so on and so forth, she was on record as saying we need to, you know, reload, and she put Gabrielle Giffords' congressional district in crosshairs. And, you know, this has been going on and on and on ever since President Obama came to office. A bad economy that still exists today, changing demographics in America that are only ensuring that these people in the long run are going to lose power, and a right wing that is completely insane to the point now where just keeping the government open, just not defaulting on our debt, is somehow the moderate position within the political arena. And it's only going to get worse. It really is, because you know something? For all that Sarah Palin has done, for all that she has said, she's ultimately still being invited, even though she's dumber than a bucket full of hair, can agree on that. She's still being invited on the Sunday shows, on the morning talk shows. She's still a part of the fascist network in Fox News, and she's still being invited to Republican events. And, you know, I would submit to you that Sarah Palin is essentially a mainstream Republican operative at this point in time. If you poll the Republican people, and this is discussed in Paul Street's book, Crashing the Tea Party, if you poll the Republican people out there, the people who consider themselves Republicans, and more so, even if you poll people that consider themselves Tea Party people, you will see alarming poll numbers. You will see poll numbers that suggest that an overwhelming majority of these people feel that too much has been made of the problems of Black America. You will see a majority of these people believe that President Obama does not hold American values. You will see a majority of these people feel that President Obama was born outside of the United States. He's a, quote, socialist, right, which is just absolutely ridiculous. These people are off the charts. They really are. And unfortunately for you and I, they, whether they're elected or not, they hold all the power in our country. They are driving the agenda of our politicians. Do you see our politicians investing in our community? Do you see our politicians investing in job growth? Do you see our politicians regulating Wall Street? No, of course not. What are they doing? They're racing to see what programs they could cut. They're racing to quote, reduce the size of government, whatever the hell that means. They're racing to privatize industries. I mean, you know, you could just fill in the blank. And Mike Papantonio of Ring of Fire Radio discusses how, you know, pretty soon we're going to have a so-called budget battle between two political parties. But he brings up the point that the result is already set in stone. It doesn't matter what's going to happen, because both political parties agree that we have to cut things like food stamps. Both political parties agree that we're not going to raise taxes to a significant extent at all if we do on the very wealthy. and certainly corporations that are paying the lowest effective tax rate that they've paid in over 60 years. So really, the rest is just tinkering around the edges. The rest is just scenery because it makes no difference. Both political parties now are very much alike. The difference is the Republican Party is the extreme party that they are. They've moved further and further and further to the right end of the spectrum. And the Democratic Party, in turn, has followed them. And so my point here is that these people, these special interests, the extreme right wing, the libertarian wing of the Republican Party, the special interests, the Koch brothers, the various right wing billionaires that, you know, essentially want to take us back to Dickens, England, they have control of everything, even when they lose elections. And you know, we can go over example after example. And that is going to exist until you and I say enough is enough. You know, our quality of life is just deteriorating. It really is. I mean, you've got income inequality at record levels, okay? The income inequality now pretty much is comparable to what we saw prior to the Great Depression. You have wealth consolidation like really very few times in American history, okay? And all of this leads to political polarization. All of this leads to, you know, a government that is essentially a puppet government being run by the very wealthy and the corporate elites. And so, you know, what that means is that it's going to be a crap sandwich for all of us until, you know, we take initiative, till we change the fundamentals of the economy. And, you know, there's a new book out by Tom Hartman, and I want to really get this book. I'm definitely going to be buying it sometime. It's coming out this week. It's called The Crash of 2016. And Tom Hartman was on MSNBC today, and he was talking about how, you know, in America, it used to be that we made things in this country. If you go back to the founding of this country, you go back to, you know, the writings of Adam Smith, and the idea that, you know, you could convert something into a product. You could take a tree branch and convert it into an axe handle, and that could lead to generational wealth. You could take a piece of iron ore and convert it into a car door, and that creates wealth because you've made something. You've created something that could last for generations. But now you look at, and Adam Smith never could have imagined this, now you look at the financialization of our economy, where what used to be manufacturing now is turned into finance. Okay, now we have a finance sector that is out of control and that is more powerful than, you know, all the governments combined. The financial sector, the derivatives market, is, you know, something like 30 or 40 or 50 times what the global GDP is. We have, you know, banks loaning money to our government. Okay, we have a Federal Reserve that is more interested in fighting, you know, inflation, which I would argue, and many others would argue, only affects the banks, as opposed to keeping unemployment in check and whatnot, because we know that if unemployment goes down, that puts an upwards pressure on wages. And you know, this has become the you know, centerpiece of our economy now, where it's all about Wall Street, it's all about stocks, it's all about the stock market, it's all about, you know, how business is doing and whatnot. And we've turned the door on manufacturing. We've closed the door on manufacturing. We've treated labor as a commodity. And then, you know, Hartman talked about, you know, that every 80 years or so, and this has been well documented, every 80 years we have a political revolution in this country. And you know, if you look at the time periods throughout history, the names change, but essentially the goals are the same. You know, we used to have the Rockefellers, we used to have the Morgans, we used to have the Rothschilds. Now we have, you know, the Koch brothers. Now we have Adelson or fill in the blank. You know, we have no shortage of billionaires trying to increase their power who are addicted to money that have utter contempt for the working man. And so it hasn't changed. What we're seeing right now is history repeating itself. And the only question is what is going to happen during the next crash? What is going to happen? I mean, it may not happen in 2016. Although if you look at the student debt bubble that's out there, and I'm right in the middle of this, believe me, I have an obscene amount of student loan debt, okay, that it's going to be very difficult for me to pay back. What's going to happen when you have, you know, a crash, you have continuing high unemployment with student loans? How are students going to be able to pay these loans back if their access to jobs is virtually non-existent in America, good-paying jobs? You know, there was one estimate by, I think it was the Congressional Budget Office, and this was echoed by the SEIU, that says that in another maybe 10 years, in 2020, you're going to have half of American jobs are going to be minimum wage jobs. And that's pretty scary. But that's where we're at right now, because these special interests that I'm talking about, the corporate sector in America, the very wealthy in America, the financial sector, which is ballooned to obscene, untold amounts, they don't need America to remain wealthy. They just need our political system to, you know, ensure their supremacy. Okay, so now, you know, you look at these free trade agreements that are being passed through in Congress. Look at all the incentives within these agreements for corporations to ship jobs overseas and whatnot. And you could just see how these corporations and the very wealthy, they enjoy using our commons. They enjoy using our government to remain rich and keep everybody at a certain point to where, you know, where they're at now. And that's what's happening. You know, business is the enemy. We have to contain business. And I'm not saying that, you know, we have to nationalize business. We have to, you know, convert our economic system over to communism. What I'm saying is that we have to really re-examine the business model. We have to examine whether or not, you know, Noam Chomsky talks about the framework of assumptions that the media uses and the arena of debate that is essentially given to the American people. Well, we have to focus our economy around business, right? We everything's about business. We're a nation of few employers and many employees, but yet the way the news is given to us is from a business point of view. You would expect that labor issues would be the bulk of news reporting in America, but no, it's not. There's no labor section in your newspaper. There's no labor newspapers in America. It's all about business, business, business. Well, we have to examine this. We have to examine whether or not what's good for business is good for the American people. We have to examine whether or not our high GDP, being the richest country in the world, correlates with the quality of life in this country. We have to believe, you know, we have to start reexamining all of these different things. And once we have an honest examination of what I'm talking about, then we could start to change some of our assumptions. With that said, we have Keith Bishop on the line. Let's go to him. Keith, welcome back to Carson's Corner.
Thank you, Bob. How are you tonight?
Good. I really appreciated you coming on again. I was talking earlier about your book, which comes out today, and the last time you were on the show, we had a lot of people listening. It was really a great show, and if you would kind of just briefly go over the main gist of your book for newer listeners out there.
Okay. The book was written with the premise in mind that the dangers of one intense, fervent minority can overwhelm an unorganized majority, and the dangers that lie within there. That's the main premise of the book.
And, you know, by the way, the book comes out today, correct?
Correct. It's now available on Amazon for print copies as well as ebook. The Apple iBook store should be available at any point in time, and the Nook Barnes & Noble is also available for ebooks.
And people could go to your website, www.slopthebook.com.
That is correct, and they can order a copy from there, and I will autograph it and send it to them. I should be able to have that for delivery next week.
Absolutely. I can't wait to get my hands on it. You know, it's interesting because I was talking earlier about Sarah Palin and how coincidentally, you know, we touched upon her last month when you were on the show and how her extreme rhetoric really fits into the Republican Party now. And some are arguing that Sarah Palin is essentially a mainstream Republican. And that kind of feeds into what you're saying in your book and how destructive this extreme right-wing faction is and how essentially it could be taking over the Republican Party.
It already has. And so I guess what I'd like to do is, first of all, the print copy is available on Amazon right now. So you can get it and have it delivered within 2 days. So it is available now. But one of the reasons why I wrote the book was I wanted to soften the edge of the intense, fervent, and determined hard right-wing fringe, which I call the CRWF, or the collateralized right-wing fringe. But to balance that, I also kind of wanted to remind the far left that, you know, we're not all equals, you know, and it's equal opportunities, not equal outcomes that the majority seek. And in the meantime, okay, is to try to persuade the middle, the bulk of the people, that change can be good, and it's up to them to implement social and economic ideals that align with the majority and reject extremism and intolerance. As you know, one of the big points in my book is also the 80-20 rule, okay, in which, you know, 80% of the people generate, or 20% of the people generate 80% of your revenues, 20% of the people generate 80% of your problems, you know, 20% of your products generate 80% of your profits, et cetera, et cetera. That rule
is that Horatio principle?
Yes, it is. You got it. And that is so applicable all across so many avenues of life. And my attitude is we need to shatter that and not make it to 80-20 because many believe it's now 90-10 or even 99-1, as in the 99%ers. And my objective is to obliterate that rule and make it 75-25. Or even 70-30, and just think of what the benefits to society that is. It's huge.
Do you think, though, by having that and by sort of dividing it up into numbers like that, that could be detrimental to society? It could sort of, you know, almost invalidate the individuals where we say that we have a high number of unproductive people in America. I mean, I don't want to equate this with what Mitt Romney said during the campaign, where he said, you know, 47% of the people can't take responsibility for their actions and depend on the government, consider them victims. But do you think that having that view at all, or putting this into practice, or politicians openly saying, you know, what percentage of the population? Well, actually, if I'm not mistaken, you're saying we should abolish this notion.
What I'm really trying to say is what we need to do is empower the middle much more than we are today. That what's going on, this is what I really truly believe, with the Tea Party is the most selfish organization we've seen in decades. And I truly believe that they, for every dollar that they put into society, they deserve to get a dollar back. That's, I think, one of their underlying principles in my mind. I totally disagree with that, okay? And I think there comes a time that you give more and you receive less, okay? And what I'm trying to get at is if we continue down and let the Tea Party win, it's only going to further empower the upper and the well-educated. And what we need to do is create opportunities for people in the middle, to people who can be difference makers, but don't have that opportunity because they don't have equal opportunities right now. Once again, I don't argue for equal outcomes. It's absolutely not the way for society to prosper. Okay, we're not all equals. But that being said, we need to empower more people who have those abilities and have those passions and desires. Real change in the world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, and it's very, very important too, because you know you mentioned the Tea Party, the idea that they want to get every dollar back they spend into the economy, and you know we hear these things that oh I'm working so somebody else doesn't have to, and you know there's this real fear of any type of assimilation of immigrants in our society, and the so-called welfare queen that we hear about all the time. But, you know, these special interests, and I was making the argument earlier on in the show, that the special interests win either way, because now, you know, instead of investing in our economy, instead of creating opportunity, which the government can do and has done, we're cutting. You know, we keep on cutting the federal budget deficit, although it may go up in a year's time. I don't know. But right now, federal spending at a percentage of our GDP is very low. And as a result of that, as a result of the fundamentals of our economy, I would argue, it's almost going to be very difficult the way it is now for the middle to actually grow and enter into, you know, a different economic category. So, you know, what I'm saying at least is that I don't think that the change is going to take place the way our economy exists now and the political forces, you know, behind how our economy is right now.
I think there are a few people who want bigger government, and I understand that. I don't either. I want better government. But let's kind of like rehash it, and I make these arguments in the book between the characters and these dialogues as they argue back and forth about the role of the government. But let's think about what are the four key things in American history that generated the greatest job creation we've seen ever in this country. And these all happened within a very short, relatively period of time. NASA was created. The Manhattan Project, for good and bad, was created. The Marshall Plan was implemented. And then the biggest and the best was the 1956 Highway Act. Okay, all of those were government-planned, government-financed, government-executed, that created not millions, tens of millions of jobs over right. a period of time. And without those four things, and particularly the Federal Highway Act, okay, this country would not be where we are today. So there's got to be a blend, and there's some projects that are so big that only the government can do it. And another perfect example is the Panama Canal. I mean, look at that. That changed shipping.
Yep.
And nobody could do that. There's no, Google can't do that. Okay? There's only one institution, and that's called the federal government.
Yeah, and Ralph Nader, in his latest book, I can't remember the name of it right now, talks about how, you know, since the 1950s or so, even before that maybe, you know, half of R&D spending has been from the federal government. And the federal government fosters an environment where, you know, we can enhance our technology. And that's very, very important. And, you know, what happens is in a race to cut the budget and a race to, you know, an austerity agenda that we've really been victim of over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years with a Democrat in the White House. It doesn't make a difference. So this is beyond political parties. it inhibits growth, and it really it doesn't contribute to a well-functioning society. And another thing too is, I would argue that some people want bigger government, whether that means government services or whatnot. They tend to be, even millennials and minorities and so on and so forth. They want government services and whatnot. But I just lost my train of thought there. But I was going to make some point, but I lost it. But in any event, I agree exactly with what you're saying and whatnot. And so where do you think we go from here?
Well, my biggest fear is that there's going to be a fracture in the parties, and then you're going to have, instead of Republican versus a Democratic election in 2016, we're going to revisit 1992, and it's going to get fractured, and that's where somebody like the Tea Party could sneak in and win at 38-42% of the vote. And that's my biggest fear. So that's part of the reason why I wrote the book, okay? And when an intense, fervent minority can create such instability that's going to cause another tremor, that people are going to start picking sides, and they're going to be radical sides. And through this book, using wild boars as a metaphor, and what happens when they declare equality with man, that they can fracture the whole nation. And then you're going to have total anarchy. You're going to have chaos. And then you're talking about a depression. And it's not going to be pretty.
Absolutely. We're talking with author Keith Bishop. He's the author of the book Slop, The Wild Boar Nation. You could pick this book up at www.slopthebook.com. Very, very important, and definitely outside the box in just about every fashion. And,
Let me ask Bob.
Yeah.
Are we going to grow our way out of this, or are we going to cut our way out of this?
We're going to grow our way out of this. And
it's the only solution.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the only and that may not happen in this political environment, and that's why, I share your concerns about upcoming elections and whatnot, because look at the Affordable Care Act, and I'm no fan of the Affordable Care Act. I've been a critic of it since day one. There are some good provisions within the Affordable Care Act, but there's only been about 50,000 people that have signed up. There's a problem with the main websites, and many states are reporting problems and so on and so forth. And if it turns out to stagnate the law, if it turns out to almost, get more difficult or maybe even collapse, then that's going to, in a sense, almost validate this extreme faction that we're talking about, because politics often is perception, and politics is often the spur of the moment. Whatever's happening at that moment, regardless of just, how extreme one party is and what they've done and what some of its leaders have said, the American people are, they're likely to power just based on, inefficiencies within the Affordable Care Act. And then once that happens, then there's no way we're going to grow our economy, because at the point that slipped my mind before was that we run our economy based on, what's good for business. And, this encompasses tax breaks. This encompasses, I would argue corporate welfare and so on and so forth. And if that occurs, along with the financialization of our economy, which has been really in place for 30-plus years now, where the financial sector is taking over more and more and more of our economy, whereas years ago was manufacturing, then we're never going to grow our way to a solid economy. We're going to have instability, and that is just going to lead to, as you said, a Great Depression when the next bubble breaks. And that's the path that I see us on. I don't see us on any other path at this point.
Well, I hope not, and I don't think so. I still believe, like I said the last time about, you know, the government shutdown, that cooler heads were going to prevail. But I truly believe the Tea Party is desperate to create that one last tremor shock that's going to reverberate throughout the world economy. And that's how they're going to take power if it happens. They have no way of taking power without doing that. Okay?
Yeah.
I still believe that they're not going to succeed. Okay? But if they do, and if we're, and if the middle class remains what I call, you know, dormant and doesn't start to rise up and demand certain changes, they have to understand we are back where we were back in the 40s and 50s. We need wholesale change. That's how we're going to grow our way out of here. And the Tea Party wants status quo or to go back. And that's not going to get us where we need to be.
They do. And now it's to the point where I think the corporate media gives the Republican Party a lot of cover by suggesting that there's somehow moderates within the Republican Party. And as I was making this point earlier, is that if you look at the current state of the Republican Party, in no way, shape, or form is it a moderate party. And what happens in this environment is that the Tea Party, this extreme faction that your book is based on, they yield all the power even when they're not even in power, because look at how far to the right they've brought the discussion, you know, about. I mean, we're not even opening up the government. We're now to the point where the government remaining open is somehow the moderate position. You look at things like the National Labor Relations Board, where, you know, the Republican Party, I guarantee a majority of Republicans would favor abolishing the National Labor Relations Board. You could look at every issue down the line, and you could see just how off the charts we become as a nation. And it's really unfortunate, it really is, because let's say in 2016, it's Christie gets in. Well, you know, what's going to happen? What is he, Governor Christie, if you look at what he's done here in New Jersey, that's where I'm broadcasting from, it's everything that essentially the Tea Party wanted them to do. Maybe there may be a few tinkering around the edges as far as gay marriage and as far as the acceptance of Medicaid, and maybe saying a nice thing here or there about President Obama. But by and large, you know, Governor Christie is just as conservative as anybody is on the core issues that affect Americans the most, and these are issues that have to do with the economy. Then you look at Hillary Clinton. Let's say Hillary Clinton runs and Hillary Clinton wins. Well, what exactly is she? Is she someone that's going to change the fundamentals of the economy? Is she someone that's going to incur economic growth? I would say no. The answer is no. So, you know, it almost – see, this is why I think the middle class – the middle is apathetic, because they understand that government is not working in just about any faction. It doesn't have to do with the function of government, but, you know, the Tea Party and the Occupy movement, which are polar opposites, but they're both, I think, responding to the current environment that we have in America today.
Well, except the Tea Party is far more organized. I'll give you an example. When I voted last Tuesday, okay, of course nobody voted. There's virtually nobody there. There were more volunteers for the Tea Party stalking the parking lot than there were voters walking in and out of the booths. They were everywhere.
Yep.
I give them their due. Very, very, very well organized. I give them their that's what really worries me. They are very well organized. The Occupy movement is not.
No, I mean, exactly. I mean, they're not even. Is there even an Occupy movement anymore? I mean, they've really been almost destroyed. And I'm not. You know, there's many different reasons why they're really non-existent anymore. I mean, They're decentralized. They don't have any funding. They're all over the place. They didn't infiltrate the closest political party, which would be the Democratic Party in terms of ideology. That, you know, there's a few Democrats out there that I support and I think are progressive candidates, but no, they're non-existent anymore. And so, you know, again, it's like we're just following the Tea Party's lead in one shape or another, and elections almost don't matter anymore.
Well, part of the success that, you know, the Democrats may have a chance is to continue to work on social issues and work on things that allow people's lives to at least feel better. I'll give you a perfect example, and I've been telling everybody this for the last 2 months. Originally, I didn't think the NSA and the Snowden issue was that big of a deal. I just figured that was going on and it was just common knowledge. That is a huge issue. I way underestimated its importance and how mad so many people are about that whole issue. And I think it's by moving away from the economy and working on other social issues that are important to people, including what I consider universal health care. I do support the Affordable Care Act. I think it was the best we could do under the circumstances. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's think about it. What's the best way? We have this huge income inequality. What's the most effective and most efficient way right now to help narrow that gap and makes people's lives better? It's health care. You're not going to do it through any income generation or higher wages when you have globalization that we have. So some type of healthcare policy that eases the burden on the lower class and the middle class is the best way, the most effective and efficient way to improve people's lives. That's why this healthcare initiative is so important in my mind.
Well, you know, I definitely agree with you to a certain extent, because if you look at what Americans are paying now for healthcare, they say the average American is paying somewhere close to 10% of his or her income in health care. And, you know, we see the health care-related bankruptcies all across America. We see, you know, health care costs skyrocketing and continue to skyrocket at the same time that these corporations, these health care corporations, are getting – you have more and more money. There, you know, you've got one healthcare company, United Healthcare. One of their CEOs over a period of time made over $1 billion. But I would argue that, yeah, I agree with you when it comes to universal healthcare. We need universal healthcare. But I would argue that the real problem with our healthcare system is the fact that it puts profits at the center of the healthcare delivery system. And, you know, when you take care of the profit motive, when you say to insurance companies, okay, you know what, you know, we're going to make sure that you're profitable so you can do the right things, which amounts to covering people with a pre-existing condition, which amounts to ending rescission and lifetime caps and all these different things. We're going to mandate that everybody buy private for-profit insurance from you guys if you guys do this, that, and the other thing, which really is the moral thing to do. I mean, if you poll the American people and ask them, do you think the insurance companies should have a right to, you know, ban someone based on a pre-existing condition or put a lifetime cap on someone's policy or spend 30% or 40% of every dollar that, you know, their customers pay to things like, you know, employee overhead, you know, CEO compensation, so on and so forth, they would say no. And still, we haven't arrived at a point yet where we reject the idea of a for-profit insurance company, you know, profiting off of somebody's health. And that I think is wrong, and it's inefficient, it's wasteful. You know, you look at our healthcare spending now, how much are we spending? One out of every $6 towards healthcare, and that's going to go up as time goes on. And we have the worst outcomes of any other industrialized country. So our healthcare spending, as Peter Joseph says in the Zeitgeist films, is a measure of sick and dying in America. And I would argue it goes down to, you know, the market-based system that we have in America. But you know what? Hopefully things will change in the future. I really do hope that we evolve as a society. We're talking with Keith Bishop. He's the author of the book Slop, The Wild Boar Nation. I encourage everyone to check it out. I certainly will be getting my copy, and I'll definitely enjoy this book because, like I said, it's outside of the box, Keith. This is something that, you know, you don't see on the shelves at Barnes & Noble and so on and so forth. And we spoke about this the last time you were on the show, how because of the nature of the book and because of the nature of the corporate media, that it's difficult to really get the message of the book out there because it is outside the box. And, you know, there's a certain framework that exists within our corporate media. So, you know, I know that we spoke about that the last time, and certainly it hasn't gotten any better as far as corporate acceptance of new books and authors.
Well, you create your own luck, so I'm out there, and I started today, and I'm trying to notify everybody in the world and let them know that I believe it's an important book that I think can really change people's perceptions on a number, or at least make them consider. As we discussed last time, it's not just so much the intended consequences of some of these extremists and intolerant people that and I get you have to have your core beliefs, and you should. And I respect people wanting to abide by core beliefs, but it gets to be extreme, and it's sometimes it's the unintended consequences, like we discussed when Sarah Palin, you know, mocks the Islamic world, and the things that Ted Nugent says, and some of these right wing fanatics. It's like total disrespect. And one of the things I argue is, until there's respect across, you know, all religions, okay, across all types of people, across all, you know, colors and races, I mean, you're going to continue to have problems. And that's one of the things I try to show real examples in this book, where the unintended consequences are devastating.
Yep, absolutely. There's just no question about that.
The one thing I wanted to say about the fix this healthcare issue, and I'm gonna call out all Republicans, all Democrats. I don't care who it is, but until you get the federal government out of it, because as of right now, we're still subsidizing business $275 billion a year. That's the subsidies that's going, because it's a direct write-off for all these corporations and all these businesses, okay? So until that's eliminated, okay, you know, we're not going to get a push towards real, true universal health care. And it's a fraud. I mean, my job was $18,000 a year. $18,000 a year was what my health care bill was for myself and three children.
That was created under Reagan, right? He created the COBRA system.
But it's not just that. I mean, saying is because in the 1940s, when they started tying insurance, health insurance, to the workplace, that's what created all these subsidies. So now that's how they got around basically wage controls back in the 1940s. That's how they encouraged people to come to their businesses, by tying health care to your employment. And since it's subsidized, okay, why is a company spending $1 worrying about the health care of their employees? They shouldn't.
Yeah, I agree. And that amounts to the number one cost for businesses. And, you know, so in other words, businesses are spending more on health care than they are on, you know, materials, investments. It's about healthcare, and other countries do not burden their businesses with, you know, providing health care for their employees. It's a different situation, and whatnot. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, if you ask people, as I mentioned earlier, you know, people are spending anywhere up to 10% of their income to health care. I'm sure in some cases it's many, many more. I don't know, you know, what the numbers are, but it's got to be pretty significant considering healthcare spending and so on and so forth. If you ask people, will they spend a little more? Will they agree to a tax or some other mechanism of ensuring universal healthcare? You would find probably a majority of Americans would support that. A majority of Americans would support paying perhaps a higher tax rate, marginally higher tax rate, to pay for health care than continuing with the current system. And if you look at, if you compare our health care system with that of the European Union nations, where they have, you know, again, they have a slightly higher tax rate, but they have universal health care, they have free education, so on and so forth. And here in the United States, we have a slightly lower tax rate, but yet, on the other hand, we're paying more for health care, we're paying more for tuition. The cost of college tuition has gone up 500% over the last 30-plus years. And we're just paying more for privatized services because I would argue that the nature of the nature of privatization and whatnot. But that's a discussion that we can have on another show. I'm going to ask you a favor because I really enjoy having you on the show, and I want to at least be able to promote your show once a week whenever I do my radio show. Would you be willing to right now record a promo for the show, you know, mention yourself and the book and website, and maybe say something to the effect that you're listening to Carson's Corner. So this way I could play it on each show.
Absolutely. Can you give me just a day or two to prepare for that?
And, yeah,
absolutely. I'd love to.
Absolutely. Okay, great. So we'll you know, I'll correspond with you once we're off the air, and I'll incorporate that into the show. So this way, whenever somebody listens to the show, they'll hear that promo and they'll be directed to, you know, wherever you want to do that. Keith,
excellent.
It's been great having you on the show. Is there anything that you want to mention before we wrap it up here?
Happy days. You know, we got to be positive. The world has to, you know, we as a nation have to embrace change and include everybody. It's all about inclusion. It's about empowering people to have a chance to be successful. And that's one of the big things about what my book's about. It's empowering people who don't have the equal opportunities. Okay? But you got to go out and get it.
www.slopthebook.com. Anywhere else they can get it, they can get it on Amazon.com.
You can buy print copies right now on Amazon, have them delivered in 2 days. You can buy e-books for Kindle on Amazon. The Nook from Barnes & Noble is already available, and Apple iBook Store should be available anytime now. And you can also go to my website, and if you buy it off my website, I will personally autograph it to you and ship it on its way. Those books, however, will not be available to me for about one more week.
Keith Bishop, thank you again for coming on Carson's Corner. I really enjoyed this discussion, and I hope to have an ongoing dialogue with you as we move forward. Once again, the name of the book is Slop, the Wild Boar Nation, and I encourage everybody to pick it up here. Keith, thank you very much again for coming on Carson's Corner.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
Take care, brother.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was Keith Bishop here on Carson's Corner. He's definitely a friend of the show, and we're proud to have him on as well. And I, like I said, once I get the book, I'm reading Noam Chomsky's Manufacturing Consent. And then after I'm done with this book, I'm probably going to wind up getting Tom Hartman's new book, as I was discussing earlier in the program, and I'm just trying to read as many books as I can. But keep in mind, though, it's very difficult for me to read a significant amount of books during the course of the month because of my work schedule and my studies and whatnot. But I'm doing the best I can because reading is power. Information is power. It really is. We're going to take a brief time out here on Carson's Corner. When we come back, we'll talk more about whatever is all going on in the corporate news or whatever is on my mind here on Carson's Corner. I want to encourage everyone to support the commonsprojectnetwork.com. You can receive a bunch of progressive material on that website from individuals just like me. Very, very important stuff. Great content over there on the commonsprojectnetwork.com. We'll be right back after this brief timeout, folks.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
All right, we're back here on Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson, and we're pretty much going to wrap up the show here today. I want to encourage everybody to friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You could also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And you could follow me here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. I want to tell you, for those that follow my MMA show, we're going to be interviewing John Peretti this week. Probably on Friday we'll have a live show with the former UFC matchmaker, John Peretti, an MMA innovator for sure. He was fairly recently attacked by Dana White, the president of the UFC, and we want to get John's perspective on that and whatnot. You can listen to a lot of John's interviews as he, I believe, has served as a correspondent on Eddie Goldman's No Holds Barred, and that's nhbnews.podomatic.com, I believe, is one of Eddie Goldman's websites. So he'll be on as well. I hope you enjoy that interview. We're really, really moving here on Carson's Corner. So big thanks to Keith Bishop I encourage you to go to his website at www.slopthebook.com. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.